Welcome back to the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, the home opener, the eclipse, Stephen Vogt's first home win, an 8-2 start, Jose Ramirez with a home run. Yesterday had everything. What really stands out in your mind when you think back on the home opener from 2024 for the Guardians?
You know, Joe, I kind of underplayed this in my own head, but the eclipse kind of just blew me away, man. I was not expecting that. I don't know what I was expecting, but you know, I don't think I've ever seen one, but I've never seen one up close and personal like that. So the eclipse out of everything kind of really jumps out of me. That's going to stay in my mind for a long, long time.
I mean, it's kind of like the Guardians themselves. Every time you looked up, you were just sort of blown away by what you saw when you looked up at the sky. So far this season, the Guardians are exceeding expectations, just like that eclipse. I got to agree with you. That was pretty cool to be standing on the field at Progressive Field and look around and having it feel like nighttime for 4 minutes there, just completely shrouded in darkness, and then you know, that gradual, eerie, sort of grayish sort of reawakening of the sun coming back out. It was a once in a lifetime experience, like they're saying, and just really unforgettable. Like, I got to agree with you. But give the Guardians some credit. I think they pulled it off. They pulled off orchestrating the whole home opener. Together, it was everything sort of really hit a strong note, and for Stephen Vogt, I mean, this was what a way to announce yourself to the city, huh?
Yeah, definitely. The team play is playing great right now. They're off to an 8-2 start, best start since 2011. They come in and really, you know, dominate the White Sox in the home opener. They get a great pitching performance by Tristan McKenzie. You know, Jose Ramirez hits a two-run homer. And the thing that kind of got me, Joe, is when we were in totality during the eclipse, I was standing in right field with all the fans. Mm-hmm. And they all started chanting, Jose, 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 Jose. They started singing that like unprompted. And then all of a sudden he hits a two-run homer during the game an hour later. So it just seemed like it was like a perfect combination of things.
And he hit that home run off of Brian Shaw, former teammate in the fifth. It was the 100th home run of his career at Progressive Field. It was the 174th home run of his career as a third baseman, and that passes Al Rosen on the Guardians all-time list, the most among third basemen. He continues to climb the ladder and in pretty much every offensive category. Every time he connects on a hit or a home run, and really, I thought it was interesting what his former teammates said. Corey Kluber and Michael Brantley were both in the ballpark before the game. They were there to throw out the first pitch, ceremonial first pitches, and because both of them have retired in the offseason. These are guys who spent several seasons alongside Jose Ramirez. Something jumped out at me when Corey Kluber said, yeah, this is a guy who came up in the beginning of his career, and we, you know, he was supposed to be go out there, steal a couple of bases, late inning replacement kind of guy. And once he got to the major leagues, he finished off this development and he became this superstar that he is right now. And he continues to be that way. And Michael Brantley said he still thinks that he's underrated. So, just to hear that, to hear how those guys who both will eventually have their own cases for, an argument for Cooperstown. They'll both probably be on the ballot at some point. This is a teammate that they're talking about who, one day will have his own case for it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That was a great story you did on Kluber and Brantley. And they remember Jose just like we remember Jose. He comes up, you know, what, 2013, 14, whatever it was, this skinny little kid, you know, kind of bouncing around the clubhouse like he owned it. You know, he was never intimidated. He ran the bases like his hair was on fire. Well, he's filled out. He's turned into a home run hitter, but he still has that strut about him, and he still kind of owns the clubhouse, and it is still a joy to watch him play.
Yeah, and there were 35,735 fans, a full sellout at Progressive Field, the new-look Progressive Field, or the evolving Progressive Field with you know, party decks now in right field and left field and blue seats in half of the stadium. It's the 11th home opener shutout for all time for Cleveland, the second at Progressive Field, and the first since 2020 when Shane Bieber was on the mound. We'll get to a little bit more about Shane Bieber here in a few minutes, but the Guardians are now 64-60. In home openers, and 12-12 against Chicago. In 24, you know, they've met Chicago in 24 home openers. They're 12-12, even keel there. 8-2 for the first time since 2011, like you said. And there were, you know, more than 10,000 fans in the park 3 hours before, two hours before the game, to take in that solar eclipse during the totality. Again, all these numbers, you've got to look at the way that home opener went, and it couldn't have followed the script any better for Cleveland.
Yeah, just think of the tradition involved there, Joe. The White Sox and Cleveland, two charter members of the American League, they have played each other in home openers 24 times. You know, just think how far back that goes. And then, you know, for Jose to become the, you know, the all-time home run leader among Cleveland third basemen, you know, Al Rosen, you know, I think he gets kind of short shifted a little bit. His last season was 1956. So think how long it took Jose to catch him. I mean, so, you know, he set the marker out. He set the, you know, his tee shot. You know, that was a 300-foot tee shot by Al Rosen. So it took Jose a while to catch it.
Yeah, and you just think about all of the totals and the numbers that Jose's continued to pile up. Every time he plays every time his team faces Chicago, he just adds to his lead. What, 32 home runs and 98 RBIs, the most of any active player right now in baseball against the White Sox. So obviously he's played them more than anybody in the game right now. But it's still impressive to think about just the totals that he puts up.
Yeah, and Jose's got to be crying over, you know, the change in schedules. What, he only gets to play him 13 times this year instead of 19 times, right? For the last two, or starting last year. So, you know, his average is going to be hurting.
Well, there's a couple of guys on this roster who are probably, you know, feeling sore about that, because they feasted yesterday, and they will continue to feast on these guys. Let's start with Andrés Giménez. Take away what he did at the plate, you know, 2-for-3, a double, an RBI, a run, and what, he's 5 doubles. He's tied for the major league lead. And really, you take away the offensive stuff, he had a brilliant game defensively more than once. We're continuing to beat this drum about Andrés Giménez being the guy, being the best defender in the American League, winning the Platinum Glove last year. He's going to win another one if he keeps this up.
Yeah, great play in the first inning. He went range far into a right center field to catch Andrew Vaughn's pop up. Tyler Freeman, the center fielder, broke back, and I mean, it looked like Giménez was playing center field as far back as he went to catch that pop up. He looked like another version of Omar Vizquel. That's the only other infielder I remember ranging that far out into the outfield to catch a pop up. But just a great job. He's really, you know, he's been dynamite in on defense for the last, what, Gold Glove winner the last 2 years, Platinum Glove winner last year. And Joe, this guy since 2022 has been hit by pitches 50 times. He got hit by a pitch yesterday with the bases loaded and drove in a run. That's collecting an RBI the hard way.
Yeah, Tyler Freeman said about breaking back on that that ball in the first inning. You know, we asked him what he was thinking, and he said, you know, I knew I wasn't going to be able to get there. So the next thought in my mind was, don't hurt Hemi, because you don't want to crash into anybody, because that would be bad. So
don't hurt the franchise.
No, that's exactly it. He said he's the captain on defense and on that infield. So you've got to keep an eye out for that. The other guy who jumps out really is Stephen Kwan. 3-for-4, had his 31st three-hit game in his career. I believe it was his sixth multi-hit game, and out of 10 games this year. I mean, you got to think about that. He is piling up the hits, and you know, one of the top hitters in the American League right now.
Yeah, he's hitting .383, leading the team in batting average and hits. He is locked in, Joe. He's setting up that offense, you know, that kind of run and shoot offense. It just, you know, he ignites it. He's you know, he pushes the plunger on the ignition switch, and you know, he's like kind of like a Kenny Lofton almost. You know, we haven't seen a leadoff hitter like this for a long time, and you know, he can run the bases, can hit for a little bit of power. You can hit doubles. He's you know, he's an exciting guy, and he really puts that offense in motion.
Yeah, still not hitting the ball hard, you know, but the soft line drives are dropping in. The infield hits are flowing. So as long as he keeps that up and stays consistent with that, that's what it's the engine that moves the offense for sure. As far as Tristan McKenzie goes, you know, he pitched what? He went into the sixth inning. Yes,
5 2/3 innings.
5 2/3. So he pitched into the sixth inning, walked 4, but and only struck out, I believe, 3, or only he walked 4, allowed 3 hits. Yeah, 2 strikeouts. So not a lot of strikeouts. You know, only allowed a couple of hits, but walked 4. But the fastball command was there a little bit, and you picked up on something in terms of just his pitch mix.
Yeah, Joe, he was a totally different pitcher than his first game of the season against Seattle. In that game, he threw 36 sliders, the most sliders he's ever thrown in a start, compared to 24 fastballs. Yesterday he threw 63 fastballs and I believe 7 sliders, you know, according to a Statcast. And, you know, that's a radical change. You know, Bo Naylor caught him against Seattle. Austin Hedges caught him yesterday against the White Sox. Hedges said, you know, different teams deserve different game plans. But I think, you know, there was an effort by vote, by the organization, by Hedges, to get Tristan to reestablish his fastball, because that's how he controls the strike zone. And Tristan said that.
Well, I mean, if you didn't like your results in your first start and you knew you were facing a lineup in Chicago that maybe you could try to take advantage of, I mean, maybe this was the perfect time for him to say, okay, let's just focus on our fastball command and go after these guys, and the results will be what they are. And it worked. Certainly, it's, you're not facing murderer's row when you're looking at that White Sox lineup. So you can maybe have a little bit more room to play with there. I thought, you know, he established against as many guys as he could. And you know, when he lost at bats, when he lost guys with the walks, it wasn't like he was missing terribly or, you know, you're looking around going, you know, what the heck? They were close misses, and you don't want to give in to a team that you know that, you know, maybe you're that it's just not as strong a lineup. And he did a good job of not giving in to guys who he knows he shouldn't give in to.
Yeah, and I think this is a guy, you know, Tristan missed so much time last year. Well, you know, he made only four starts with the shoulder injury at the start at the end of camp, and then the strained UCL in his right elbow. I think it's going to take time for him to gain confidence in that elbow, to pick up some lost velocity. Hedges was saying that yesterday that, you know, because he missed so much time, he'll work back into his velocity. It'll pick up. He was throwing about 92 miles an hour, 91, 92 yesterday. And that's about what he threw in his first start as well. So I would imagine if everything goes okay, you know, that the velocity will pick up, you know, the longer the deeper he gets into the season.
Yeah, by the time you're talking, you know, June, July, August, he should be nice and heated up by then. The bullpen continues to be dominant. Tim Herron, Hunter Gaddis, Cade Smith, Emmanuel Clase, you know, 3 1/3 innings, only allowed one hit and two walks. Clase strikes out 2 in the 9th, and he had Vogt all jazzed up. About, you know, it wasn't a save situation, but he came out there with a 4-run lead in the 9th. And I think Vogt wanted to see, you know, Vogt wanted that that boost of adrenaline when Clase walks in from center field to his walk-up music and the crowd gets going all crazy. He said that was sort of an electric moment. And you know, what more could you ask for? Clase comes out, gives up a hit, but strikes out 2 in the 9th. And finishes off the game.
Yeah, that was a perfect ending. I was a little surprised to use Class A in a non-save situation, but I think you were right, Joe. I think, you know, Vogt was looking for an exclamation mark for that day, the whole game, and Class A gave him one.
Yeah. During the introductions, they cheered loudly for Jose. I'm sorry, for Class A. Obviously, they cheered for Jose as well. But they also had a resounding cheer for Shane Bieber, and it was emotional. Bieber put his hand over his heart as he emerged from the dugout, you know, we had seen before that when he talked to the media, you know, he got a little choked up when talking about what's ahead of him. Obviously, you know, it could be as early as the end of this week where he's heading to have surgery on his elbow, Tommy John surgery, and it's never a certain thing that a pitcher is going to come back. I mean, this is a career-threatening sort of injury. So, you know, Bieber has that confidence that, you know, guys have done it in the past. It's happened. They've come back from it. But whether or not, you know, his return is going to be with Cleveland or with somebody else, coming out of that dugout, it could have been the final time we saw Bieber do that. Just what did you take away from his interactions yesterday and just the idea of, you know, the prospect of, you know, that might be the last time we see Shane Bieber in a Cleveland Guardians uniform?
Joe, he kind of bared his soul to the media. I was, you know, you got to be moved a little bit by that. You know, I mean, this is a guy that's a free agent at the end of the year. I'm sure, you know, in the past, the Guardians have tried to extend him. You know, he's turned it down. He and his agents decided to go year by year. You know, trust in yourself, trust in your own ability. And then he blows out his elbow 2 starts into this season. And now he's facing an uncertain future. So, you know, it is, you know, these are kind of strange times for, you know, Shane Bieber. And I'm sure he's wondering, A, about the surgery, B, how he'll come out of it, and C, just what kind of pitcher he's going to be after it and where this will take him. That's a lot to take in, and you know it, and he, you know, he didn't hide from it. I really respected that, the way he handled all the questions yesterday. He was honest to a fault, and you just got a real good glimpse of what he is as a guy, as a man, and as a pitcher. I mean, I admire him.
Yeah, and it, like you said, processing emotions is something that he's still working through. And I think anybody who's been to the heights that Bieber has been, and the expectations that he sets for himself, and now to not know if you'll ever get back to that point, and to think about, you know, what he will could potentially miss out on. Just in terms of his career and, you know, contracts, all of that plays into it. You said he's a guy who decided to go year to year when the question of does he want to be extended, you know, started to come up. That to me was a clear indication. Once he started going year to year, that was to me was a clear indication he's on a timer. He's out of here the minute he can be out of here. I don't know if an injury changes that. I don't know if this particular injury changes that. I still think he's going to look to sign with the first club on the West Coast that he can, and you know, maybe they give him a deal that says, you know, it's a 2 or 3 year deal, knowing that first year that he's not going to be available. We've seen it happen with other pitchers facing this kind of injury. To me, in my mind, Bieber coming out of that dugout, the camera shot of him with his hand over his heart, acknowledging the crowd. To me, that was the last time I think it's going to be the last image that I have of him in a Guardians uniform. But we'll see. You know, the things might change. The you know the club might decide. You know, we're gonna you know try and re-sign him, and maybe he listens. Who knows? Because this is home for a lot of people. It just never really has felt like home for Shane Bieber.
Yeah, I don't know, Joe. I mean, it all depends. I mean, you know, after he gets the surgery, you know, does he work closely with Cleveland's, you know, staff, his medical staff, or does he, you know, turn go to another, you know, do his agents have their own staff, or does, you know, who will, you know, kind of oversee his rehab and his, you know. His, you know, t his when he starts his throwing program again, but he's going to be down for this year for sure. And then, yeah, you know, so I mean, it you know, it really is, you know, it's a big question mark. And but I would think, you know, Cleveland is almost obligated to oversee his care in the beginning of his rehab, at least coming out of the surgery.
Right, and Bieber, I'm sorry, and Kluber and Brantley, who have both suffered season-ending injuries in their careers, and both talked about you know what it's like to be around the team during your rehab and to be able to sort of feed off of that injury, and, you know, get your work done and still you know be around the club throughout the rest of that season after suffering those injuries. You know, they talked about how that was a benefit. And you know, who knows what we talked so much in post game yesterday or last night about the vibe in that clubhouse and how it's been the greatest and the most positive vibe that any of those guys have felt in a long time. And a lot of that is credit to Stephen Vogt. A lot of that is credit to the fact that they've been together and they've matured and they've grown up together over the last 3 years. You know, is Bieber going to be a part of that or is he not? Is that something that he's going to, you know, stick around for during his rehab? Or, you know, does he, like you said, rehab somewhere else on his own under the auspices of the Guardians and until the end of his contract? And then who knows? So we'll continue to follow that. We'll continue to follow all of the injury news coming out of the Guardians. The best place to get updates on that is Guardian Subtext. You can subscribe to Guardian Subtext for $3.99 a month. Get updates from Poinsy and from me sent directly to your phone. Sign up by going to cleveland.com/subtext or by sending a text message to 216-208-4346. Poinsy, I keep going back to the eclipse. I keep going back to those 4 minutes. I thought one of the best parts about that was when the moment of totality hit, the ballpark DJ had timed up Pink Floyd's Eclipse from Dark Side of the Moon, so that the line, you know, and the sun is eclipsed by the moon hit at exactly the moment that totality hit. And I that gave me goosebumps just as much as looking up and seeing what I saw. But when you took your glasses off and you saw that ring around the sky, what did it make you feel, just, you know, personally for yourself?
I just really loved it. I was so, you kind of get overwhelmed. It was just so, I don't know what I was expecting, Joe. I thought it was going to be like a movie, but it was like real life, you know, and it was just so cool to watch it and, to see, you know, that this is something, you know, you're never going to see again, probably. And just such a, it was, you know, it was like a perfect setting. You were at the ballpark, you're around fans, everybody was cheering. It was like a party. And you're seeing something that won't be seen again in Cleveland till 2444. So
we won't be seeing it.
Yeah, we won't. We'll be out in the ether somewhere.
How did your dogs react? What was the animal situation? Because you know, if they're running backwards circles and barking all over the place, that could be an issue.
Yeah,
too.
I don't know. I wasn't home, so I don't know what Ollie was doing. I know she survived though.
that's fantastic. The Guardians survived. I'm telling you, they pulled it off opening day on a total solar eclipse. The only MLB franchise with totality overhead during their pregame festivities. I think it was you know, spot on. Credit to everybody. Hey, even the flyover and during the national anthem for the home opener kind of blew me away. I don't even know what kind of plane it was. It was this giant. Normally you get like the stealth bomber or something like that. This looked like a 1940s, like you know, giant you know, cargo ship or something like that. And it came right up over the buildings. It looked like it was coming right for the press box.
I was yelling, pull up, pull up.
Con Air. It reminded me of Con Air. That's what it was. I thought Nicolas Cage was behind the controls.
That's right.
So
the crazy guy with the hell the army helmet on, right?
There you go. That was it. Hoynesy, that's going to wrap up today's edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. We've got hopefully we've got about five more games on this homestand if we can get them in weather-wise. Looks like we're in good shape for tonight. We will check back in with you tomorrow here, and we'll talk to you then.
Good deal, Joe.